Sylvia Linda, who's involved with the Sharjah Research Project, and who's been working on the Tricolor Rahasia for a couple of years now, and is going to tell us about her research with a paper entitled The Doctrinal Teachings of the Tricolor Rahasia. Sylvia.
So this is the first outcome of my work in progress on this text. So any suggestions, critics are most welcome, because it is just the first stage of research. The complete title will be The Reformulation of the Svatantriyavada and the Abhasavada in the Doctrinal Teachings of the Tripura Rahasya. So the aim of my contribution is to highlight a specific and crucial element of the teachings of the Tripura Rahasya, the secret doctrine of the Doctrine Tripura, which is a Sanskrit work of South Indian origin, probably composed between the 12th and the 15th century, if not later perhaps, and associated with the Tantric Shakta religious tradition of the Sri Vidya. The element in question is the reformulation to be found in the Tripura Rahasya of the Pratyabhichna doctrines known as Svatantriyavada, so doctrine of freedom and independence, and Abhasavada, doctrine of manifestation or reflection. So the doctrinal teachings of the Tripura Rahasya do not receive a systematic treatment in the Mahatmya Kanda, so the section on the majesty of the goddess, which is the first of the two extant parts of this work, on account of the mythic narrative character of this section of the work. Yet they may be found in various passages throughout the text, within some of the hymns of praise and in several discourses uttered by both human and divine characters. So the ideas expounded in the Mahatmya Kanda are further developed and elaborated in the Jnana Kanda, where in any way in accordance with the stylistic devices characterizing the whole work, they are set out within the frame of dramatic dialogues and philosophical tales. So in order to elucidate the topic on which the present contribution focuses, the relevant passages from both Mahatmya and Jnana Kanda will be scrutinized, and whenever formulations are scanty or ideas are suggested only by means of metaphors, possible lacunas will be filled by referring to the sources which might have inspired and influenced the author or authors of the work. In fact, the philosophical and theological teachings of the Tripura Rahasya reveal in their terminology and in the ideas expressed therein the influence of the Kashmirian Shaiva non-dualism of the Pratyabhichna and also of the Spanda. So both schools which molded the philosophical and the soteriological background of the Dakshina Amnaya, so the southern transmission of the Shakta Kulamarga, according to the terminology recently adopted by Sanderson, and specifically of the later South Indian developments of the tradition of Tripura. So as in other texts of this tradition, in the Tripura Rahasya too, the influence of the Kashmirian Shaiva authors was probably exerted through the medium of the South Indian commentators of their work, such as Shivananda, Amritananda, and others. So to give first a brief outline of the chief tenets of the doctrine in general, so to speak, of the Tripura Rahasya. So the goddess Tripura, or Tripura Sundari, is conceived as ultimate reality, both metaphysically and soteriologically. She personifies the energy permeating the supreme consciousness, so Chit-Shakti, an energy consisting in an illuminating manifesting power, Prakasha Atinka, endowed with a free and playful will, so Svatantra Chit-Vilasini. These are words used in the text. And with respect to Shiva, who is luminous consciousness or conscious light, the goddess represents the active, reflective awareness of the self, that is to say the Vimarsha. And her dynamic, vibrating and flashing Spurti is used in the Tripura Rahasya, where we have Spurata, most often used in the Kashmirian sources. So her vibrating and flashing power of action, of Kriya, is realized in her relation to the world. This relationship is conceived in terms of both immanence and transcendence, corresponding to the unfolding of the goddess in the world, an unfolding that entails the withdrawing of her true nature. And the goddess' entire cosmic activity results from the exuberant of her free and joyful playfulness. So the, what is called lila in our text, krida most often in other sources. So the idea of divine play, on account of its wanton and spontaneous character, is connected with the absolute freedom and independence, so the svatantra of the goddess in her cosmic functions, as well as with the manifestation of the world, which is envisaged as a reflection, a bhasa, projected by the divine consciousness within herself. In his introduction to the Pratyabhijna Hridaya Vaikshenaraja, which is a synthetic presentation of the teachings of the Homonymous School, Jayadeva Singh wrote, quote, I quote, "From the point of view of the creativity of ultimate reality, this philosophy is known as Svatantriyavada. From the point of view of its manifestation, it is known as Abhasavada." Unquote. So this twofold doctrine is outlined in a few extracts of the Mahatmya Kanda, but it is especially in the Jnana Kanda that it is extensively elaborated and discussed. So therefore, following a presentation of the relevant passages of the Mahatmya Kanda, my attention will be focused on the reformulation of this doctrine in the Jnana Kanda, in the light of the pertinent Kashmirian sources. So now you may have a look at the number one of the passages in the handout. And in the Mahatmya Kanda, in a hymn in praise of Tripura, one reads, I quote. So the translations from the Tripura Rahasya are mine. "Your wonderful appearance, all exteriority suppressed, is like a mirror that contains the totality of this world. This is your great being, your victorious power, which accomplishes what is difficult to be accomplished. O Lady, though your own form is all-pervading, by taking a limited form, thanks to your power, which is difficult to be accomplished, you make appear all the manifold distinctions of perceiving subjects and perceived world. You who, having taken a limited form, consider such manifold form of yours as binding, being aware of it in your consciousness, you appear as such again by virtue of your inner volition. Thus you, acting under the impulse of your freedom, call into existence the vast divine play of the manifestation of the world in the mirror of your own self. And contemplating this work of yours, you rejoice incessantly. O Goddess, homage to you." Unquote. So thus, according to this text, the all-pervading goddess, according to her free will and by means of her unfathomable power, somehow contracts herself, taking the form of the limited subjects and objects of the world. A world that is characterized by bondage, and thus projecting this world on her own self as if it were an image reflected in a mirror, she rejoices in her divine play. So these verses evoke and seem to be based on an extract from the Yogini Hridaya, so the seminal source of the Sri Vidyatra, of the Tripura tradition, which reads, I quote in the translation by André Palou: "When consciousness becomes luminously aware of the universe appearing on the screen of herself, filled with the desire of action, she produces it by her own free will. She is then energy of activity called mudra, because she gladdens the universe and makes it flow." Unquote. And in Padu's explanation, which is based on the Deepika by Amartha Ananda, one reads that when the consciousness, which is energy of reflective awareness, so chit vimarsha shakti, unfolds in the universe, projecting it on herself as its substratum, she becomes energy of action and rejoices in her own transformation by making the universe flow from Shiva to Earth. And here, mudra is interpreted traditionally as signifying rejoicing, so modanina, and making flow, dravanina. So by comparing these two extracts from the Tripura Rahasya and the Yogini Hridaya, one can see in the table which you have the correspondences of terms and concepts. Parimursha in the Tripura Rahasya and Amarshane in the Yogini Hridaya, so both deriving from the root mrsh, from which the term vimarsha also stems, indicate the reflective awareness arising in the luminous consciousness, that is expressed by chit and prakash respectively. And dharpana in the Tripura Rahasya and vittal in the Yogini Hridaya indicate the mirror surface on which the universe appears. And antar yatnat in the Tripura Rahasya and svechaya in the Yogini Hridaya indicate the goddess' own will, and her power to act is expressed by Kriya Shakti in the Yogini Hridaya and Svatantriyat in the Tripura Rahasya, where in addition Svatantriya conveys the idea of a free and unbounded action. And finally, Mandasi in the Tripura Rahasya and Modanat in the Yogini Hridaya express the joy of the goddess at her creative act. So both texts can be said to mean that when the goddess, alias supreme luminous consciousness, becomes aware of the universe, which is shining as an image reflected in the mirror surface of her own self, then, urged by her own free will, she unfolds in this universe, playfully rejoicing in her unbounded action. So this metaphor of the reflecting surface is taken up at other points of the text of the Mahatmya Kanda. Just to give a couple of instances, I read two short quotations. So one, it is said, "You are she in whose body appears, like a painting on canvas, the manifold series of tattvas from Shiva to Earth." In the same way, the sky with the moon and the stars appear in the water. You alone, the Supreme One, you are everything. Or at another point, she alone is there like a mirror on the surface of which the universe is taken as a picture. So the ideas inherent in these metaphors, which are only hinted at in the extracts from the Mahatmya Kanda, are further developed in the Jnana Kanda, where the metaphor of the mirror occurs in many, many places, beginning with the opening verse of the invocation, which reads, Om, homage to you, who are appearing as origin of everything and bliss, you made of the Supreme Consciousness, you who are appearing as a mirror on which shines the manifold wonder of the worlds. So the reformulation of the Abhasavada to be found in the Jnana Kanda will prove to be a crucial element of the teachings of the work, and clearly reveals the influence of the Kashmirian authors to whom this doctrine is ascribed. It is worth mentioning that in his introduction to Utpaladeva's Ishvara Pratyabhijna Karika, Torella remarked that, I quote, an original contribution by Utpaladeva to the philosophy of the Pratyabhijna is the doctrine of the Abhasa. And according to Utpaladeva, every aspect of reality is a light. It is a reflection in the mirror of consciousness and has its ultimate reality in consciousness. Unquote. And Torella confirmed also that the doctrine of the Abhasa, as it was elaborated first by Utpaladeva and later by Abhinavagupta, left traces in the scriptures of the Tripura tradition, such as, he quote expressively, the Yogini Hridaya and the Tripura Rahasya. So to begin with the general principle, now I'm referring to the passages number 2 in the handout. In the Jnana Kanda, it is maintained that every manifested thing exists within that which manifests it. Now I will not quote the translation, but I'm paraphrasing the contents of the Jnana Kanda because the passages were too long to be quoted entirely. What I am paraphrasing is contained in the handout which you have. Moreover, it is said that everything which is manifested, whether inside or outside, abides within the manifesting light. And the whole world is absorbed in this light, in the Supreme Consciousness, who is called Tripura, which freely manifests herself everywhere and always within herself. So this fundamental tenet that anything exists outside the luminous consciousness or conscious light, which is to be regarded as the absolute inside, according to an expression used by Michel Filin, is upheld also in Utpaladeva's Ishvara Pratyabhijna Karika. Now I quote from the Torella translation, so Utpaladeva 187. Insofar as they are essentially constituted by consciousness, so Chin Mayat Ve, the manifestations permanently reside internally. Insofar as they are manifested as external, owing to the power of Maya, they also exist externally. Unquote. So to illustrate this idea of the absolute inside, the text of the Jnana Kanda again makes use of the analogy of the mirror and its reflections. And the versatility of this metaphor in its various occurrences shed light on its diverse implications. Thus, in the chapter 11, here it is in the handout number 2-1, where the doctrine of the Abhasa is extensively discussed, one reads that just as the images reflected in a mirror are, notwithstanding their distance from it, reflections that abide within the mirror, in the same way the whole universe is contained in the divine consciousness and is supported by the great goddess. And moreover, at another point of the text, in connection with considerations about universal relativity, it is claimed that this world, although it is regarded as exterior, is in fact a purely mental creation, a bhavana, which is projected on the undeveloped, on the avyakta, which is itself made of consciousness. And the variegated world is painted on the canvas of the undeveloped, a canvas woven by consciousness within herself. So such statements in the Tripura Rahasya may be elucidated in the light of the relevant considerations by Abhinavagupta, who in the third chapter of his Tantra Loka, dealing with the chapter is dealing with the Shambha Upaya, so the way of Shambhu, the way of the Lord. So he provides a detailed exposition of the Abhasavada, so particularly in the verses 166 and 268 onwards. So, and in his comparison of the ontological status of the world with respect to its reflection in the divine consciousness, to that of an original image, the so-called bimba, with respect to its reflection, so pratibimba in a mirror, Abhinavagupta notes that whereas an original image, for example, a face, exists outside the mirror in which it is reflected, the world does not exist outside the divine consciousness, independently from her, but rather is blended, mishra is the term he uses, with her. So therefore, the status of the world is comparable to the status of a reflection, because just as a reflected image is blended with its support, the mirror, in the same way the world is blended with its support, the divine consciousness. However, in the case of the world, there is no external original image, because it is the divine consciousness herself which makes the image of the world appear within herself. So to strengthen the tenet that the world exists only inside the divine consciousness, now it is the passage is number 3, the Tripura Rahasya asserts that the whole universe, which is reflected in the goddess like a city in a mirror, though appearing as separate, so vibhinnavat, from her, is not separate from her, so avibhinna. Moreover, it is said that just as without a mirror no reflected image can appear, so without consciousness nothing can shine. And hence, just as the reflection is non-different, atirikta is the term used, from the mirror, so there is nothing different from consciousness. And these ideas of both non-separation and non-difference between supreme consciousness and world are also expressed mutatis mutandis at the beginning of the third chapter of the Tantra Loka. I quote from Padu's Well, I had translated myself, but with the strong help of Padot's translation, which is in French. So thus, the Supreme Lord, who is completely free, manifests in the sky of his own self the whole immensity of the cosmic emanations and reabsorptions, as in a clear mirror appear, without merging together, earth, water, and so on. In the same way, in the unique Lord, pure consciousness, shine all the modes of existence of the universe. Unquote. So this is Tantra Loka 3.4. And on the basis of Jayaratra's commentary, Padu explains that just as the objects reflected in a mirror, which are different from one another, also appear different from the mirror, although they are not separated from it, in the same way the cosmos, although appearing as different, atirikta, so the same term used in the Puranahasya, from the Lord, is not truly different, so an atirikta from him, and in all its manifoldness is simply a reflection within the divine consciousness. So therefore both the Tantra Loka and the Tripura Rahasya maintain that just as the images of the objects reflected in a mirror may appear as distinct from the reflecting surface of the mirror, yet as reverberations they do not have an existence separate from that of the mirror which contains them. So in the same way, the cosmos, shining in all its manifoldness, does not have an existence independent from the divine consciousness, which manifests it. Thus, the whole cosmos is nothing but an image reflected in the mirror of the divine consciousness. So this metaphor now is passages number 4. This metaphor implying a similarity between consciousness and mirror on the one hand and word and reflected image on the other hand is also used to account for the consistency between the oneness of the divine consciousness and the manifoldness of the world. Thus, in the Tripura Rahasya, it is stated that just as a mirror seems affected by the multiple images reflected in it, even though its surface is uniform, in the same way the consciousness, though being one, appears as manifold because of the variety of her manifestation. And to explain this apparent contradiction, it is stated that as it is only possible for a city to be reflected in the mirror in all its rich variety, thanks to the fullness, density, and uniformity of the reflecting surface of the mirror, in the same way the entire multifarious world can abide in the full, dense, and uniform consciousness. Thus, it is in virtue of a perfect purity that the unity of the mirror is not affected by the diversity of the images reflected in it, and in the same way, the unity of consciousness is not altered, but the variegated world shining in her. And this view is illustrated also by a comparison between consciousness and akasha, space. And here it may be argued that space, having the nature of void, can contain anything, whereas consciousness, which is undivided fullness, could not bear even the slightest trace of duality. However, the authors of the Tripura Rahasya maintain that it is thanks to her freedom that the divine consciousness, without making use of any material whatsoever, can make the variety of movable and immovable beings appear in the mirror of her own uniform essence. Thus it is on account of her freedom that consciousness can hold in her fullness the manifoldness of the world in the same way as space in its emptiness. So this problem of the consistency between oneness and manifoldness is tackled also by Uppaladeva in his Ishvara Pratyabhijna Karika, where within a discussion on causal relation, he explains that as far as the fact of being a cause is concerned, now I quote from 2.4.19, this is not possible for an insentient reality, because its nature, which is single, would conflict with its appearing in differentiated forms. On the contrary, it is possible for an absolutely limpid, svacha, unitary, conscious reality, because there is no conflict here between its unity and its capacity to receive manifold reflections. Unquote. So Utpaladeva underscores the fundamental difference between an insentient, so jhava, and a conscious reality, showing thus the limits of the analogy between mirror or space and consciousness. And this fundamental difference is also elucidated in the Tripura Rahasya. These are the passages of number 5. Again in the 11th chapter, where in this regard it is first reaffirmed that for all things the fact of being, so the asti-ta, is none other than prakasha, so manifestation, light, and the latter is itself consciousness. Then the highest form of manifestation is that which is produced freely. And whereas insentient realities are not self-manifesting because they appear on account of consciousness, consciousness instead, without depending on anything else, manifests herself in herself. So therefore, it is said the existence of things in the world is none other than the light of consciousness. And it is then reasserted that as the existence of a mirror conditions that of the images reflected in it, so the existence of consciousness conditions that of all things. However, whereas the mirrors which are insentient things devoid of freedom depend on the presence of external objects, so the original images, the bimbas, in order to reflect them, consciousness in her absolute and pure freedom manifests in herself her own reflections. And moreover, a major characteristic of consciousness is that though reflecting like a mirror the multifarious world, her own essence remained unaltered. So therefore, besides the fact underscored by Uppaladeva that unlike the mirror which is insentient, consciousness is sentient, an essential exception in the analogy of the mirror is to be made on account of the absolute freedom and independence of consciousness, her svatantrya, considered as an essential characteristic of her. And a further argument connected with this line of reasoning can be found in the commentary by Jayaratha on the following verse of Abhinavagupta Tantra Loka. I quote, thus this whole universe is an image reflected in the pure sky of the Bhairavic consciousness, in the Lord, without the aid of anything else. Unquote. And Jayaratna explains that the luminous and absolutely free nature of the Lord is essentially related to the vimarsha, to the reflective awareness. Then, quoting from other more ancient sources, Jayaratna, or better, these sources, read, I quote, "The whole universe shines within the self like a many-colored picture in the midst of a mirror. However, consciousness, by a movement consisting in the reflective awareness of her own self, is fully aware of the whole. But it is not so for a mirror." Unquote. So, by developing and deepening the analogy of reflection, Abhinavagupta had previously, as I said before, defined the ontological status of the world envisaged as a reflection in the divine consciousness. And he had shown its substantial difference from an original external image which is reflected in a mirror. And now Jayaratna clarifies the peculiarity of the consciousness mirror and her difference from a material mirror. In fact, unlike a mirror that, as Jada, needs an external light in order to reflect anything, the divine consciousness is herself essentially light. And furthermore, she is aware of the world appearing within herself, because it is she who emanates this world, projecting it as a reflection within herself. So, as stated by Abhinavagupta, this creative power of the divine consciousness, who is the Lord in the Tantra Loka, so this creative power is identified with the goddess. I quote, "The absolute independence of the Lord towards his being, the universe, is called supreme illuminating intuition, pratibha, goddess unsurpassed." So, anuttara. It is maybe interesting to note that the remark made by Jayaratna, so in the 13th century, had been already made by Yogaraja in the second half of the 11th century in his commentary on the following verse of Abhinavagupta Parama Artha Sara. So Abhinavagupta writes, here I quote the translation by Lin Balsavudon, "As in the orb of a mirror, objects such as cities or villages, themselves various though not different from the mirror, appear both as different from each other and from the mirror itself, so appears this world in the mirror of the Lord's consciousness, differentiated both internally and vis-à-vis that consciousness, although it is not different from consciousness most pure, the supreme Bhairava." Unquote. And in his commentary, Yogaraja shows the limits of this metaphor, underscoring the essential difference between the insentient mirror and the divine consciousness, which knows by means of the power of vimarsha the world created within herself by her own free will. So thus, by demurring to the analogy between divine consciousness and mirror, Abhinavagupta and his commentators emphasize the chief characteristics of divine consciousness, namely vimarsha, and closely connected with it, svatantra. And her sovereign freedom opens the possibility of the manifestation of the world and of its being endowed with ontological substance. Now, passing to the number 6, in the Jnana Kanda of the Tripura Rahasya, one reads that before creation, the divine consciousness is absolutely pure. then upon creation, her great freedom takes the form of an imagination, sankalpa, which makes the world appear like an image reflected in herself. It is thanks to the steadfastness of her great imagination that the world has duration, and it is because of the fullness of her freedom that the world is common to all. Sadharana is the term used. On the contrary, human beings, on account of the limitation, the sankocha, of their imagination, are able to create only private worlds, which cannot be common to all. Like the worlds created in dreams, or also the creating by your yogic skillfulness. And a similar comparison between the respective powers of the divine and human imagination is also drawn by Utpaladeva in his Ishvara Pratyabhijna Karika. Here one reads, I quote, "Indeed, the conscious being, God, like the yogin, independently of material causes, in virtue of his volition alone, renders externally manifest the multitude of objects that reside within him." Unquote. And Utpaladeva in his Vritti later explains that the individual subject, and a fortiori the yogin, truly has a creative power like the Lord, on account of the fact that his nature, although he may ignore it or having forgotten it, is identical with that of the Lord. However, whereas the phenomenal world created by the Lord is common to all subjects, individual creations are not common to all, so they do not possess sadharana. And the same term is used also by Paladeva. And they cannot be experienced by other subjects. Moreover, all that which is created by the individual subject depends upon the world, the phenomenal world, which is created by the Lord. So the power of the yogin to bring worlds into being by means of his bhavana, so we may translate it as meditative realization or creative imagination, so is dealt with extensively in the Jnana Kanda of the Tripura Rahasya. So 2-3 chapters are devoted to this topic. And first, the teaching which may be drawn from experiencing a world created by a yogin is that the world is the belief, so the mental creation, the bhavana, that one projects upon it. In the very moment in which that belief vanishes, the world dissolves also. Hence the text reads, "The world is like a dream." And in addition, in both the dream state and in the waking state, one projects oneself like an image on a mirror on the surface of one's own consciousness. However, even if through the experience of yogic creation as well as through his dream state, man realizes that the world is nothing but his mental creation, a product of his creative imagination, so that, like Prospero, he might say that, I quote from The Tempest, "We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep," unquote. Nonetheless, this does not entail that the world is evanescent like a dream and devoid of ontological substance. On the contrary, whereas the worlds created by the limited powers of human beings lack solidity and permanence, so styria, and cannot be common to all, so they do not have sadharana, the world manifested by the infinite power of and absolute sovereign freedom of the divine consciousness draws its reality from that of the divine consciousness herself. As Abhinavagupta writes, so passages number 7, I quote, "Thus the universe, reflecting itself in the mirror of consciousness, avers the purity of the cosmic form of the Lord," unquote. And in his commentary, Jayarata explains that the Lord's own pure form is that of the universe, which is inseparable from him. And he concludes, I quote, "This whole universe is the form of the sole, unique, supreme Lord, who is consciousness," unquote. Thus, as stated in the text itself of the Tantra Loka, the word partakes of the qualities of the Lord. I quote, "This universe, reflected in consciousness, will retain all her essential qualities, brightness, freedom, and so on," unquote. And Jayarata adds, quote again, "Therefore this whole universe, all the normal, become the body of the Supreme Lord, who is light," unquote. So the teaching of the way of the Lord, the Shambhava Upaya, is synthesized as follows, I quote, "All this is arisen from me, is reflected in me, is inseparable from me. This is the threefold way of Shambhu," unquote. So this realistic idealism, which characterizes the non-dualist Shaivism of the Kashmirian authors, is also clearly advocated in the Tripura Rahasya. As one reads in the concluding verses of the whole Jnana Kanda, which now I quote in full translation, "O Parashurama, the statement that the world does not exist is to be regarded as an incomplete point of view. In fact, the conviction that it does not exist is untrue and can never be admissible. That is evident on account of the existence of the sadhaka himself, who holds this point of view about the world. How could there be the dissolution of the world only by the negation of its existence? As a city reflected in a mirror draws all its existence from the very condition of the mirror, in the same way the reality of the world is claimed on account of its having the same nature of the pure consciousness. To give up this full knowledge would entail a restriction of the pure consciousness, and it is because of the excellence of her own majesty that the knowing subject is grasped only through the knowable world." Unquote. So to now to sum up and conclude, by scrutinizing the relevant passages of the Mahatmya and Jnana Kanda, I hope to have highlighted that the twofold doctrine of the Svatantriya and Abhasavada, though not systematically treated, is an important and essential element of the philosophical and theological teachings of the work. And the references to the Kashmirian sources which inspired the ideas expounded in the Tripura Rahasya help to elucidate these ideas and to give them some consistency. So the first quoted passage from the Mahatmya Kanda, read in the light of the verses from the Yogini Hridaya, contain the chief notions of the doctrine in a nutshell, namely that the goddess awareness of the world reflected in her own self, her will to act, and her sovereign freedom, which shapes her playful, joyful, creative act of the manifestation of the universe. And the comparison of the relevant passages from the Jnanakanda with the passages from the works by Utpaladeva, Abhinavagupta, and their commentators show how the versatile metaphor of the mirror and its reflections was worked out. And on the other hand, the inwardness, non-separation, and ultimate non-difference of the multifarious world with respect to the one divine consciousness was maintained. On the other hand, it was claimed that the active awareness, the creative imagination, and absolute freedom of the divine consciousness gives to the world its ontological substance. What this twofold doctrine amounts to is a realistic idealism, and as Padoux explained, evoking also the soteriological consequences of this doctrine. So I conclude with the quotation by Padoux as also a sort of homage to this scholar who left us less than a year ago, but leaving such a rich and also lively contribution to the Tantric studies. So he writes, here is an essential conception of the non-dualist Shaivism, according to which the universe is made of consciousness. It is not unreal that it was according to the Shankarian Vedanta. It is this reality of consciousness pertaining to the whole creation that the adept will realize as being reflected in his own self, insofar as this is not different from the divine self. Thus identified with the divine, he will participate in the flashing superabundance of divine cosmic play.